From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of January, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. And a bit later in the program, Dave Chatterton will join us to discuss the agricultural energies, including the new high price for crude oil and what's been happening with natural gas. We'll talk about the Middle East and Ukraine and Russia and all kinds of things related to energies across the planet and the impact that has on agriculture. And then as we close out our time together, we'll take up the weather forecast with Don Day right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at $5.99.5. That was up 3.25 cents. The May at $6 even, 2.75 higher. And December futures at $5.57.75. New crop down a half. Soybeans finished the March at $13.61.25, 8.5 lower. The May down 8.5 as well at $13.71. And November at $12.84 down 9. Bean meal $15.50 lower. The bean oil 62 cents higher. Wheat futures soft red up 27.5 at $7.69. The hard red at $7.72. And 3/4, 27.75 of a cent higher. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $141.85 per 100 pounds, down 27.5. Feeders at $165.42.5, 95 cents lower, and lean hogs at $89.27.5. up 82.5 cents. Crude oil at $84.82 a barrel, $1.52 higher. Diesel fuel at $2.67.3. That's up 3.9. And the wholesale price of gasoline, a penny and a half higher, $2.43.8 for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now down 490 points at 35,311. Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, now joins us to discuss what happened in Chicago. An interesting day, Wayne. Thanks for being with us, by the way.
Well, you know, after a three-day weekend, we generally have some exciting things happen in the market, and today did not disappoint us.
It's soybeans lower, corn was okay, and oats and wheat, they managed to gain some for the day.
Yeah, oats are up some around 34, 35 cents. You know, the wheat up 23 or so, you know, some real activity. You know, when we went home on Friday, why oats were down for the week, and here we are and come back, not oats, I mean wheat was down for the week, and here we are, we come back strong as can be. A lot of talk about possibility of Russia and the Ukraine, more tension, more troops being moved. You know, there's even been Twitter stuff that maybe something was shot or something over there, but that helped the wheat a lot. But the other thing that's helped the wheat a lot, China's had two auctions and sold out 100% of their wheat on both of those. And there was numerous international tenders for wheat today and a lot of it going on in that way. And, of course, we're still awfully, awfully dry in the western U.S. where most of our wheat comes from.
Yeah, so wheat getting a lift on many things across the planet, some of them weather, some of them policy issues that are related to China and Russia. That gives corn, because wheat can be used as a feed grain, I suppose, an underlift pin. However, on the flip side, soybeans looked to the three-day weekend thinking, coming into the weekend, maybe some wetter weather in the areas that were dry, and looks like they got some rainfall and more as expected. Is that right?
Yeah, they got rain. They got some decent rains over the weekend, and they look to get showers, you know, through the next 3 or 4 days here, again, helping do that. Depending on which weatherman you're looking at, then it sort of goes back to the drier pattern like that. I did see some pictures that were taken of a field that looked absolutely disastrous before the rains, and it sure perked up afterwards if those were the right pictures we saw. On the internet, we can't trust everything we see for things like that. But, it, you know, we do know that beans are, you know, are quite resilient and can come back that way. The question's going to be, this will help recover some of the crop, some of it's a little past, but, you know, it's going to be to see whether it continues or that it goes back to the hot and dry system down there again. But all in all, why, you know, it is looking ahead like that, we did see, you know, come back off the lows on the close here today. So, you know, down less than 10 when we were down 20-some cents, isn't a bad close on what they're looking at.
What do you think will happen the rest of this week, and what should we watch most closely? I know Ukraine and Russia, other things as well. For instance, we have not yet talked about what's been happening in the Middle East today.
You know, that all there's things. First off, it's going to be the weather, mainly in South America, to look and see if we do get a change or we do just come on and if we could turn back to the hot and dry. And that's going to affect a lot of things that way. I think, you know, as far as the world is concerned, there's a lot of craziness going on everywhere in politics and the economy. You know, let's face it, if you looked at the Dow or the S&Ps today, they're down hard on the ideas that this inflation is not transitory, that the COVID in China can mess up the world economy because their factories are not producing a lot. And whether we like it or not, the factories or the retailers of the world import a lot of Chinese goods. And I mean, all over the world, not just the U.S. So, you know, we're looking at that. We're looking at crude oil shooting up. You know, it was down and all of a sudden it's up $1.50. I was looking at it. So we've got all sorts of craziness with all of those things happening. But I think the biggest thing when we narrow it down to it is going to be South American weather.
What should farmers make of it all, and do they need to take any different positions than they have already?
I think if we can get, I'm looking if we would get and move on up a little bit here. I still think that if you can get over $13 cash for some of your beans for the fall, I don't think there's anything wrong with getting up to 25 to 35% sold. Look at that. But I mean, as far as this, if you have some stuff you need to move, if you haven't cored your bins and stuff like that, you know, look at an opportunity to sell $6 corn to core those bins. I think that's a very important thing to do so you don't turn gold into mush.
Hey, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He is in New Market, Indiana. Hey, have you checked out our website? I hope so, but if not, visit willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find our daily agricultural programming. Listen to it on demand. Just click and play or visit the podcast page where you can subscribe to it using your favorite podcast applications. Follow the instructions there for the Closing Market Report Commodity Week, even the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. And of course, you can check out the schedule of events, including the upcoming University of Illinois Crop Management Conferences. The first one, by the way, is tomorrow in Mount Vernon, Illinois. You can still register for those, so check that out at willag.org. That's willag.org. In today's agricultural news, the Environmental Protection Agency is reversing decades of practice in an attempt to further the agency's compliance with the Endangered Species Act when evaluating new pesticides and ingredients. In the new policy, EPA will evaluate the potential effects of each new active ingredient on federally threatened or endangered species and their designated critical habitats before the agency will register the active ingredient. EPA will also initiate endangered species consultations with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service. Michael Friedhoff of the EPA says his agency is taking a critical step to register new pesticides in a way that prioritizes protection. Well, Microsoft is putting $50 million into sustainable jet fuel. Microsoft is purchasing part of LanzaJet facility in Georgia that will produce jet fuel from ethanol. LanzaJet says its facility will start producing sustainable jet fuel next year. Reuters says experts consider the airline industry one of the hardest to decarbonize. Governments and investors are trying to boost incentives to produce lower carbon emitting jet fuel. LanzaJet says work is almost complete on its Freedom Pine Fuels biorefinery. Plans are to start producing 10 million gallons of sustainable aviation fuel and renewable diesel per year from sustainable ethanol in 2020. 2023. The plant will also produce sustainable fuels from waste-based feedstocks. Last year, the White House announced a goal to lower aviation emissions by 20% by 2030, as environmental groups place increasing pressure on the industry to lower its carbon footprint. Microsoft created its Climate Innovation Fund that will invest $1 billion over 4 years to speed up the development of carbon removal technology. Let's stay with the EPA for the moment, where the Farm, Ranch, and Rural Communities Advisory Committee recently issued a report on the waters of the U.S. rule. NCBA strongly supports the committee's recommendation to develop a clear and limited BOTUS definition and protect key exemptions for common agricultural features, says Scott Yeager, NCBA's chief environmental counselor. NCBA encourages the EPA to listen to its own advisory committee recommendations, which are clear. Farmers and ranchers need clear rules and regulatory certainty, he says. Among the recommendations are ensuring EPA's compliance with the Clean Water Act and the Supreme Court precedent limiting federal jurisdiction over bodies of water. Let's stay with policy, but we'll switch to trade. The U.S. must get more aggressive on trade talks, an American Farm Bureau official says, after the United Kingdom and India launched talks on a free trade agreement. AFBF Senior Director of Congressional Relations, Dave Samuelson, says the Biden administration should see the UK-India FTA announcement as a signal to engage on U.S. deals.
When other countries are pursuing deals, you need to be in it. You need to be in that arena. That's what we've been saying almost from the beginning of this administration. We wanted them to get going on so many fronts.
And not just with India, says Samuelson.
Could have thought that China, of course, wants to be in the CPTPP. That should be a spur to moving the U.S. in that direction, and now talks with India.
The Farm Bureau counselor credits the Biden administration for opening India to U.S. pork recently, but he says it's only talked about a trade deal.
There is talk the administration of doing this Indo-Pacific framework they're talking about, again, including India in that. How specific that will be, how binding any agreements will be, we have to see.
Reminded of the U.S. TPP experience under the Trump administration when other nations beat the United States in doing tariff-reducing trade deals with Japan, Samuelson argues the U.S. must engage. AFBF's president, Zippy Duval, has said on other issues, if you're not at the table, you're not on the table. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Hey, you know, for more than 100 years, University of Illinois Extension has worked with agricultural communities to help empower them to meet the challenges they face with confidence. And now we're looking towards the future, but we'd like your help. We've got a survey to that end, looking forward at what farmers and others in the agricultural world might need in the future. You can help us out right now by taking that survey. Visit it online at go.illinois.edu/agneeds. That's go.illinois.edu/agneeds. Or you can just visit the willag.org website. I'll have the survey link posted there. And thank you for taking the time to fill this survey out. Of course, it's anonymous. It's open to all Illinois producers and anybody in the agricultural industry, including professionals, now through the end of March. It'll take about 10 to 20 minutes to complete, so set aside some time, but please do take the opportunity to help us out at Illinois Extension by visiting go.illinois.edu/agneeds. Dave Chatterton now joins us to take a look at the agricultural energies as he does once a month on a Tuesday. Hey, Dave, thank you for being with us. On this Tuesday, you get the luck of the draw. I don't guess the luck of the draw because we're talking about brand new highs in crude oil. Tell me where it is and why.
Yeah, Todd, we've had an $85 print here in WTI crude. We're up over 88 in the Brent crude here this morning. And so we're seeing the market from a future standpoint, new highs for crude, for Brent, for heating oil, for gasoline, and all this accumulating in what are 7 to 8 year highs here in the energy market, basically the highest that we've been since 2014 in these futures markets. And the latest, I guess, straw on the camel's back here is that we, you know, on Monday or yesterday, we had some some Houthi rebels that are backed by Yemen who attacked in Iran, who attacked a fuel facility on the Saudi-UAE border, killed three people, blew up a few tankers. And, of course, that comes as OPEC is already, I guess, we'll say, struggling or having trouble meeting their production targets. In other words, they're supposed to be increasing production here by 400,000 barrels each and every month here as we go through the sequence. Last month, they were only able to increase about half of that. And so it's been a problem. And I guess the reliability factor here and the introduction of geopolitical risk is something that we don't need at a time that we're in a pretty fragile state here anyway, with some pretty low global inventories on crude oil.
What do you think it means, if anything, going forward?
Well, I think the market is going to stay tight here for a while. I don't, you know, we've seen this movie before as far as the rebel attacks and what's gone on here. I don't know that it's a big change in anything, you know, dramatic going forward in the sequence. There are two elements here at work. I think one is, you know, have we seen an underinvestment in the capital side of the oil production industry, not only in the U.S., but also globally, where we are going to struggle to put our production back to or above where it was pre-COVID. If you look at the demand estimates for, you know, going forward into 2022, we're basically right at, you know, plus minus that 100 million barrel per day mark. That's a very high mark to maintain here. We need to make sure that we can do that. I think politics are also an issue here with, you know, there's some talk that the OPEC, you know, group is slow playing their increases a little bit in response to the Biden initiative to try and get them to produce more, and having, you know, coming down on them on one side of the fence and then asking them for increased production on the other side of the fence. So we've got the Russia-Ukraine situation in the middle of all that and a lot of stuff going on here that creates uncertainty. And I think so long as, you know, these stocks look to stay tight and OPEC isn't showing signs of overproducing, we have a market that stays tight and is very, you know, has some underlying support to it.
Yeah, as it relates to energies, the Russia-Ukraine situation, which has been worsening over the last 2 weeks, I'm wondering whether that has more of an impact on natural gas or on crude, or equally in just across the sector of energies.
Yeah, I think maybe the latter side. I think it's equal here. If you look at them in terms of the crude oil production, they're due to produce about 10.5 million barrels per day this month. That puts them right on par with the U.S. and Saudi Arabia within, you know, kind of neck and neck. So they are one of the top three producers and very important. Last month, they were supposed to increase by 100,000 barrels per day. They were only able to increase by about 40,000 barrels, you know, according to their OPEC quota. So they've been coming up a little bit short here. You know, the situation has, you know, a direct implication not only for oil, but for grain. You know, you've got Ukraine, or Russia is the world's number one wheat exporter. Ukraine is number two. Ukraine is also number four in corn exports. And then you've got the oil situation on top of that, with natural gas supplies in Europe here now are, you know, we're getting through the winter. We're into January here, but they're still below, I think, where the comfort level would be in terms of, you know, of a political fight with Russia and their appetite for such. At the same time, the oil supplies on the global market, we know that, you know, that the demand, you know, the demand has been catching up here quicker than supply, and that we're creating a deficit for the last half of 2022 and trying to deal with that. So I think it hits all of those buttons, Todd, almost equally. And pretty big concern for the market, or a pretty big area or topic that we'll be watching here as we go forward.
Can you explore natural gas just a bit more as it relates to nitrogen needs across the planet, and maybe what the charts for natural gas look like at this point, where we've been and where we are today, the expectations going into the spring as well?
Yeah, so natural gas, I mean, you know, we've seen a pretty swift, I should say, coming into the end of the year, pretty swift and good-sized correction in that natural gas market, not only in the U.S., but also globally. That didn't necessarily translate into lower, at least nitrogen prices right away. We have seen the urea market in the U.S. take a pretty good correction, but the rest of the nitrogen and fertilizer complex seems to be holding rather firm going forward. Technically, the market has gotten back on its feet here a little bit and has shown some appetite for going higher. We're in a situation where our inventory levels are adequate, but not overly so, and a little bit below what we would call like the 5 or the 10-year average. The cold that we've got here this week is really kind of the first big bout that we've had this winter on a nationwide basis. So we'll see how things react. I would expect the markets to, you know, to stay firm here and stay above that key $4 kind of psychological number here going forward for a while, Todd. But later in the summer, we'll have to see what happens. I think, you know, production there, just like we find in the oil side of the complex, is going to be a little bit, you know, it's straining to meet demand, I guess is the way to put that.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Dave Chatterton. He is with Strategic Farm Marketing. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. He's a day weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
It's kind of a nice day here. A little sunshine, warmer. However, I think things will change. That's pretty typical of the month of January. Can you give me an indication of what the weather will be like across the United States?
Well, it is really looking like January. It's really looking like the heart of winter is setting up shop. And the pattern that we see over the next week, and I think probably well into early February, is a continuation of more often than not some colder weather, especially from the Rockies east into the Midwest. And a lot of snow has fallen, especially in the central and northwest Corn Belt. And the snow cover is pretty extensive across portions of Iowa, up into Minnesota, Wisconsin, the eastern Dakotas, and then stretching down into Missouri. And this time of year, with the low sun angle and the cold weather coming, that snow field is going to have an impact. And so temperatures are going to be pretty cold through the rest of the month and into early February. Any type of a prolonged January thaw is not in the cards.
When you talk about cold, are we talking colder than average and seasonal or just seasonally cold?
No, we're looking at most of the central Great Lakes, most of the central, northern, and western Corn Belt areas on the whole over the next 7 to 10 days to be below average. It's not to say there'll be a couple of days where temperatures are going to moderate. But if you were to cumulatively, you know, add up over the next week to 10 days, you're going to find out it's going to be colder than normal.
Take a look at the southwestern plains for me very quickly. It was very dry there. Have conditions changed much for the hard red winter wheat crop?
Hasn't changed much. However, there's a little bit of good news for those areas. I'm not promising a big storm system, but we do see a pattern developing here at the end of the week and into the early part of the weekend, where there's going to be some light to moderate snowfall over some of the wheat areas of eastern Colorado, maybe even southwest Kansas, into the panhandles. Those areas are also going to have some pretty cold Arctic air coming as well. So we're hoping that with that Arctic air, there is going to be a little bit of snow cover to give protection. But there is a slightly better opportunity over the next week or two for some of those wheat areas to at least get a little bit of precipitation.
Move from the southwest to the southeast. There they had snowfall over the weekend, unusual for them. Tell me a little bit about that and what expectations are for that part of the country.
Well, they're still going to feel the effects of this colder weather. I mean, we had some areas of northwest Arkansas with a foot of snow. So we had snowflakes reported in the panhandle of Florida. And like the Midwest, the northwest winds aloft that are developing in this pattern will persistently keep temperatures down in the southeast colder than normal. And with that interface to where that colder air meets that warmer, moist air coming up out of the Gulf, well, there's going to be precipitation as well. So the southeastern states are likely to head to more chances for rain. And on the northern fringes of that rain, there's going to be more of the white stuff as well.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. A quick reminder that coming up tomorrow in Mount Vernon, University of Illinois Extension will hold the first of four crop management conferences. These are the University of Illinois Crop Production and Crop Management Conferences. They'll start tomorrow in Mount Vernon and then move to Macomb on February the 2nd, here in Champaign on the 8th, and in Sycamore, Illinois on the 15th. There's also an online version, either February the 1st or March the 14th. You can find out more anytime you'd like by checking out our website at willag.org. Just look for the Crop Management Conference and hit the link to get yourself registered for the program. You have a great afternoon.